Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We're recording.
Recording, everybody. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to Two Black Girls, One Rose.
Where together we'll uncover what we can learn about modern dating, love, and relationships from popular television. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Justine.
And welcome back again to the Love is Blind after show.
Woo!
So exciting.
Yes.
Shout out to Dr. Viviana, our inaugural guest who joined us last week to dissect episodes 1 through 6. Today we'll be joined by another very special guest, certified dating coach Damona Hoffman. Damona has been coaching singles on finding love for over 17 years. She's an OkCupid official dating expert and the official love expert on the Drew Barrymore show. We're excited to dig in with Damona today to understand what exactly went wrong with Kenneth and Brittany.
Maybe she knows.
Yeah, maybe she can figure out how they couldn't make it past the honeymoon. As well as we'll talk Chelsea's anxious attachment, Clay's trauma dumping, when's the best time to reveal your trauma, and signs you're dating a narcissist inspired by Jerame.
Oh, messy Jerame.
So very excited to chat with Damona about all the things, and also want to remind everybody to stick around for the very end of the episode. We will be discussing the latest episode of Real Housewives of Potomac. We have not forgotten. Okay, before we dive in with Damona, just a couple things we got to talk about, y'all.
Yes. We have to talk about Trevor and Jerame, the two of them, a pair.
The pair of yous. This weekend, a hot mess. I can't.
Oh my god! And a little bit of Kenneth too. To be honest, there's a lot flowing around with him too as well.
Oh really? I haven't seen. Oh
yes, girl. Traitors, because it's the best show on television.
Yes, we need to catch up. It's been a minute.
That's that. Yeah. Drag Race, the second best show on television.
Yeah, let's talk a little Drag Race.
Oh my gosh! Yes. And then, do you want to talk about One Day?
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about One Day. Everybody's chatting, everybody's watching, everybody's crying, going through their emotions. So I'll give you my experience as well, friend. All right. If you want to listen to this episode ad-free with our juicy pre-show hot takes on Trevor, Jerame, Traitors, Drag Race, all the above, make sure you join the Rose Garden over at Patreon. Head to patreon.com/twoblackgirls1rose. You can watch us on video. You can also join us for Two Black Girls Watch, our weekly reaction video. We are currently watching Millionaire Matchmaker Season 3. It is a blast.
It is a hoot.
It is a hoot. You can also try out a Patreon membership with a 7-day free trial, so might as well give it a whirl. Got nothing to lose. And shout out to the Rose Garden.
Love you guys.
Beautiful community. We love you guys. We are so excited to welcome to our Love is Blind after show. She is a certified dating coach who has been coaching singles on how to find love online and offline for over 17 years. She hosts the award-winning podcast that we actually were on a couple months back called Dates and Mates. She is an OkCupid official dating expert and serves as the official love expert of the Drew Barrymore show. She's also an author of F the Fairy Tale, Rewrite the Dating Myths, and Live Your Own Love Story, a guide to dismantling the myths that get in the way of finding love, where she reveals the four pillars of strong relationships, goals, values, communication, and trust. She also happens to be a Love is Blind super fan and is here to help us break down what's going on with these couples in episodes 7 through 9. Please welcome to the show, Damona Hoffman.
Yay! Thanks for having me to talk about my favorite guilty pleasure.
Yes. Oh yes. my gosh, everyone.
Sociological study informing my work. God.
Yes. That's true. Yeah,
definitely. So that was our next question is, what is your relationship to Love is Blind? How many seasons have you watched? We're on season 6 now. So how many have you put yourself through?
Clean sweep.
All 6. Wow.
I worked on a show that was a spinoff of hashtag Black Love. I mean, hashtag.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
It was called hashtag Black Love. It was a spinoff of Married at First Sight, which was by the same producers.
So they
reached out to me when they were like, you should watch our new show, Love is Blind. Let us know what you think. And I, like, from day one, I was like, y'all knocked it out of the park. Like, the formula just can't be beat. Obviously, season one.
Yeah.
I mean, any reality dating show, it just can never capture the magic of a season one show, because once people know what the concept is, then you get all the people that are on it more because of what it can do for them than truly going through the social experiment, which I think we're actually seeing the most of this season.
This season. Agreed. Yep.
You agree?
Yeah. We were just talking about that during our pre-show. It's now season 6. This is like a global phenomenon of a show. People going into casting know that. So you're going to get some people who are, just here for fame and fortune and what they can get. And the pureness of Jessica and Mark and Lauren and Cameron and Amber and Barnett, like, those days are gone.
It'll never be until the next show.
Until the next one. Season 4 came close, but we'll see. You know,
still not as pure though. But yeah.
So you watched this with your husband. You let us know. What are his thoughts about season 6 overall? Ooh, I love the husband commentary. And does he willingly watch, or are you like, come sit down and watch this?
No, he's really into it, and
I love it.
Really, there's probably three. Relationship shows that we watch together, and this is of course the mothership, and we also watch Love on the Spectrum, and
Couples Therapy. Couples Therapy.
I know.
Couples
language. It's the trifecta.
Seriously.
But this one is the one that we talk to the TV the most.
Okay. Is it like, okay?
Yeah, and he's jumped on board. Usually it used to just be me screaming at the TV, but now he has started to have feelings and opinions that cannot be kept inside. So there was a lot of screaming, definitely. Well, in the pods, I loved how we spent more time in the pods this season. First of all, I always felt like that's too fast. Like I'm interested. I don't know if it's just because I'm a dating coach, but I'm interested in that discovery part. Not just how it plays out, but like, how did we even get here? And so I loved that we were in the pods longer, but it did allow for more pod drama. And all of the various love triangles, which you never know how much of the love triangles you don't actually see, like in prior seasons. But they were obviously leading with that, because obviously, if everyone's dating each other, the person they end up with is not the only person that they're talking to. So there are probably more more possible combinations that we just never even got to see. And in some seasons, we never even got to see like the couples that made it all the way to the end. Go figure. So what has he gotten worked up about? Everything Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like Chelsea's very triggering to men, a lot of
Is
men.
Is that it? You think so?
I think so.
Yeah.
I can tolerate her, but.
When people say, like, my ex was crazy, they're trying to think that we think it's like a Chelsea type of, like, she's so crazy like that. Like, as if that's how they're trying to paint her. I think men think that Chelsea is the crazy one.
Yeah, but. Yeah, a lot of crazy happens to her too. And for the record, when she was like, I think Who do people think you look like? And she said, seconds before she said Megan Fox, I said Megan Fox. So
Damona,
I was like,
no, you
really?
Yes, I
Damona,
did.
Stop
yes,
lying.
I did.
Stop, Damona.
Yes, I did.
We need to stop this conspiracy campaign. No.
What? She looks like a real world version of Megan Fox. She does. But like,
Megan Fox wouldn't be the first person that came to my head, though.
Damn. I'm telling you, either. It's in there. I see it. But okay. I feel like she doesn't really deserve the backlash. Now, of course, she doesn't actually look like Megan Fox. Like, right. She said that it's just her eyes and her hair. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we all ran with it.
Oh, that's such a dangerous one, because Megan Fox barely looks like Megan Fox.
And that's what my husband said.
Are wild. Yeah.
That's what my husband said. He said he looked like exactly that. Megan Fox doesn't look like Megan Fox. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So that's the big controversy, I think, okay. of this season.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and he had a very strong reaction to Clay at the beginning, too.
Really?
Oh, interesting.
I know we're on episode 7 through 9 now, but let us forget Clay episode 1 and 2.
Yeah, not great.
Was a very different Clay.
Pacing around the room, talking about Matthew.
And talking about he needs a girl with a fat ass and big lips. Like that.
Yeah. Right. Like, what are we doing here? Like, there was a lot of bravado happening that that has dissipated. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's hot takes from Seth Hoffman.
From the hubby.
Nice.
Thank you, Seth. Interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing that Seth Hoffman said was, I hope he picks Jessica because I want to see what she looks like when she wakes up with no makeup. And he's like, who are
oh
you?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I don't even. Oh, my Lord
oh
have mercy.
God.
There was a lot of filler. I swear.
A lot of filler.
Love is Blind
tight
season
filler.
6.
Yeah.
Sponsored by lip filler.
Yeah, sponsored by Juvederm, baby.
Juvederm and lip gloss.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That's
things we may never see. I don't
know. Hearing the male perspective. My brother calls me after like every episode. He also got big beef with Clay. He, like your husband,
really?
Never forgot who Clay was in the beginning. So this this new Clay, he's like, this is bullshit. Like, y'all don't see this is bullshit. I'm like, I mean, I don't know. So that's funny. That
I
you
love
said your,
that, like,
your husband
we make excuses, you know, we're just like, oh, but he's changed. He's evolved.
Coming around.
You know?
Yeah,
guys,
it's
just never
days,
forget.
Guys.
They're like, I
went
saw
to
you.
Dominican Republic. Yeah,
all right,
changed.
The husbands, the men have not forgotten Clay. Anyways, let's dive right on in. We want to start with Kenneth and Brittany. So, spoiler alert: they broke up. In case you didn't know, or anybody. And I don't think any of us saw this coming. This was very out of left field. They were one of the couples I was not really worried about. So Kenneth and Brittany, they're in an interracial relationship, right? Brittany seems a-okay with this. Seems like she's had experience dating black men before. Kenneth seemed a-okay in the pods and in the women's in the men's quarters, talking with the guys about his family will be okay with it. But it was after Kenneth's conversation with AD and the conversation about raising black children that you could see the concerns started to arise. And quickly we see him shut down and then eventually just completely shut off from Brittany. So we're only left to assume. We don't really see much from the two of them as to what happened, but we're only left to assume that it's due to his apprehensions with being married to a white woman. Question I have for you, Damona. So you yourself, you're a product of interracial relationship. You're biracial, right? You're currently married to a white man, I want to say.
Yeah.
No.
Very
yes.
White.
Okay.
Guilty as charged.
Guilty as charged. I as well. My husband is white man as well. So question I have for you, when dating interracially, what considerations need to be thought through? What needs to be discussed in these early stages of dating?
Well, first, I was really glad that they even addressed it this season because I feel like it's been brushed under the rug. Like, we talked about this when you were on Dates and Mates. Like, why were we trying to pretend like the Chelsea and Kwame issue with Kwame's mom had nothing to do with race?
Yeah.
Like, let's just
really?
Not even touch that third
talk bill. About it.
So I was glad that they actually brought it to the surface. And it was interesting that the conversation with AD was what sort of seeded the conversation between Brittany and
and Kenneth. Yeah, it was their first like friction conversation,
yeah,
right?
Between Brittany and Kenneth. It was, and it's interesting being in an interracial relationship. I feel like there is no list of questions up front because you can't anticipate what is going to bring up a conversation in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when we were going through the racial reckoning or whatever you want to call it, and I had a very different reaction to what my husband was experiencing because of my lived experience as a person of color, that wasn't something I could really anticipate. That wasn't something I could ask questions around.
Right.
And I feel like that is a question mark that you have to be willing to endure and walk through as it comes up when you embark on an interracial relationship.
Okay. So you just got to be ready to answer questions.
You have to have enough confidence in your relationship that when the question comes up, the question that you can't even anticipate is going to be asked, that you'll be able to address it together. And so I think there's a lot of focus on like, okay, well, what are the list of questions? And even, I mean, between you and me and all of the Two Black Girls, One Rose audience, I think that was a producer-seated conversation because to me, the questions felt very by the book. Like,
asking, wait, which conversation? AD
or from AD?
The whole thing. And the AD the whole, and then
everybody's this, questions. Okay.
And then what... inevitably what Kenneth raised with Brittany of like, well, what about our kids? And because to me, those are the questions that I used to hear 30 years ago, you know, when I was a kid and people would be like, what is this thing of being an interracial person? And it's like, it's just like being a person only, you know, it's just you have two cultures that you're holding simultaneously, but it's, to me, it's again, it's an unanswerable question. And therefore, it's not something that I feel like, oh, you need to front load that in the decision. It's much more about, like, I'll tell my clients, ask how their family is going to react. Because those are the people that you are going to be interacting with first. And
right.
I have seen a lot of relationships not be able to stay together because not because the couple themselves weren't strong enough, but because the outside forces within their family or friend circle caused them to see more distance between the two of them than was actually there. But I want to hear your take, though, Natasha.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had questions. I for sure had some questions when I started dating my husband. In early dates, race came up, I'm sure. I can't really remember, but I do specifically remember maybe this was like our fifth or sixth date. It was the first time he was coming to my apartment. And I literally had a list of questions. Like I was falling pretty fast for this guy. And I was like, I don't want to fall completely in until I get some core things. So we discussed like religion. That was a huge one that we had kind of touched on, but not really. And then one of them was race. And I really wanted to know from him just his comfortability with race and discussing race. So not that I need to know like his stance on all of the different racial topics, but just like, how comfortable do you feel? I'm like, I'm a Black woman. I'm like, I'm blackity Black. My family's Jamaican, like very culturally, like, you know, from a strong cultural background as well. Like, how comfortable are you with discussing issues related to race and just having conversations about race? Like, does it make you clam up? Do you get awkward? Like, that was kind of it was a very open-ended question, but I was like, I just want to hear your thoughts. And he was like, yeah, sure, shoot. And I just wanted to see... it was almost not even the question or the answer itself that was important. Yeah. It was like how he was responding. Like, was he, or how he like visually looked. Like, was he starting to look stressed, or was it just I was asking almost another question? That to me was important because I was like, I don't want to be with somebody who's uncomfortable. Like, I even mentioned race and he just visually looks uncomfortable, you know? So that to me was important. I also wanted to know, like, do you have any friends of color? Like, am I going to be the only person of color, like, stepping into your entire life? I had already met one or two friends early on, but I was like, do you hang out with any other Black people in your circle? Like, what's that about? So that for me was important. I just wanted to know, like, what's your world look like that I'm stepping into? And then also, yeah, just like, are you generally comfortable with talking about race? Or is this like a brick? Because I knew I was the only Black woman he had dated at this point. Like, all his prior girlfriends had all been non-Black. So I was like, is this like a brand new, like a whole new world? Like, a whole new world for you, and you are like deeply uncomfortable right now? Or are you just like, you know, it's chill? So that was for me some considerations that I thought, for me to move forward, I needed to kind of assess with this white man.
Yep. Once you go Black.
So they say. So they say.
Yeah. I think to me, I 100% agree with you. It's about just bringing it into the conversation. Mm-hmm. And more so than even being like, what do you think about Blackness?
Yeah. It's like, right.
If you can bring up topics that will show you how they respond in those situations, mm-hmm. but know that that's like a never ending well.
Right.
Because
yeah. Right.
I couldn't have anticipated George Floyd, or even like, we talked about how we were going to raise kids and mm-hmm. religion and race. And for some reason, it didn't occur to me to ask, like, and how will our children identify? Because to me, it was like, obviously they're going to be biracial because math. And when we were enrolling our kids in school and we had to fill out the forms, and it was like, check which box, which I have problems with boxes anyway. I talk about it a lot in F the Fairy Tale. Mm. When it came down to actually checking the boxes, and my husband just checks white without even thinking, just checks white for our kids. And I was like, what's that?
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, our kids are 3/4 white. And I was like, yeah, but they're 1/4 Black. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a new conversation. So suddenly you have to, and that's why asking the question the way that you were phrasing it, Natasha, mm-hmm. is really important, because you're going to have to answer more questions along the way. And it's more about how that person thinks and addresses the questions in a dialogue, mm-hmm. than it is about their specific beliefs in that particular moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That made me think of another thing. Like, I think another thing that was important for me was that we can talk about certain topics, racialized topics, and he had an opinion and he was comfortable sharing an opinion.
Right.
I think that was another thing I was conscious of, is like, I don't ever want to be, one, myself walking on eggshells, or two, feeling like I have to teach someone. Obviously, there's a level of, I'm Black, so I have a lived experience, so there's more than I'm going to know or understand about, you know, the world from a Black lens, that he's obviously not going to. But I think also him being comfortable having an opinion, or having sharing his opinion or talking about certain topics without clamming up or shying and being like, well, what do you think? You know, because then it feels like I'm leading us in the racial world, and I don't want that like burden either. I want you to also feel like you can talk about things on your own. So that was another thing I just thought of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was more struck also by just the way technology impacted in social media.
With Kenneth and Brittany,
Brittany. Mm-hmm.
So they have both come out in interviews saying that that was not the case, and that was all editing. Brittany was like, it wasn't an issue. Kenneth was like, that is not, they pieced that together. And when Brittany said it, I was like, oh, so that really was like, they were really just putting that together with them.
See, reality TV is not real
life. Yeah.
But I was kind of I have strict rules around technology in my house. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I even seeing it once, I didn't like the
same.
Yeah, I'm talking to you and you're just into your phone and completely ignoring the fact that I'm talking to you. And I think this is a problem for, not just for like Love is Blind couples. I think this is an issue overall in relationships today that's not going to go away.
Right.
Yeah.
But needs to be managed.
Do you think there's anything Kenneth or Brittany could have done differently in their relationship, whether as it relates to their conversations around interracial marriage or even with technology, anything that you see that they could have done a little differently in these early stages?
No, I really don't. And you all said that you felt like they were good from the beginning. I felt like they were not good from the beginning. Oh, I felt like they just matched because they were like, oh, you have a relationship with God. I have a relationship with God. Therefore, we are a match. And I felt like that was just doing a lot of work for them. Because
they put a lot of stock in their faith. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, we only see a condensed version of what happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I was like, what else do they have in common exactly? Mm-hmm. I couldn't really see the similarities the way I could with some of the other couples of like, okay, that makes sense that they're compatible. I was like, to me, just being a person of faith, and because there's also so many nuances even within I am somebody who goes to church or I'm a person of faith. There's so many more nuances even within that I've seen tear couples apart where it's like, well, we both go to church, but it looks very different or the way that we observe or worship is completely different. Mm-hmm. So I think that they didn't really do enough of the digging on compatibility in the pods. They kind of just saw that similarity and were like hanging on to that as a life raft. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't enough.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true. Well, speaking of teaching, so let's talk Chelsea and Jimmy and attachment styles. First question here, though, first of all, have you read the attached book? Because I think we've all read the attached book, and now we're at comma PhD, right?
Okay. I've actually done a workshop with Dr. Amir Levine, who wrote it. So I do not a PhD. Nice. However,
you got more than we do.
I've been doing the work.
So Chelsea is giving anxious attachment 101. I too am the definition of an anxious attachment diva. Jimmy seems very secure. And are attachment styles something that you talk about a lot with your clients in the very beginning of them dating and how to address their attachment style?
I don't. And I actually talk about this in F the Fairy Tale too. I think we're really quick to slap a label on something. We're like, oh, he doesn't like me. Therefore, he is avoidant.
He's insecure.
You must be avoidant if you don't like me. We're really looking for shortcuts in dating today. And like it's like the attachment styles are a quiz. check the box and then tell me which one I am and then I'll look for the compatibility. And really, there's so many more layers to it. For me, Jimmy's not given secure attachment either. I know, controversial here.
Is he giving avoidant to you?
What do you think? Yeah.
Well, I don't want to label him. I mean, I think it's so much of it is also in who you're relating to. Some of it is ingrained from your primary caregiver when you're a child, and that's kind of where you're at. And then some of it gets amplified based on who you're in relationship with. And look, I mean, Chelsea says that she's had every partner cheat on her in the past. She's been cheated on. I don't know if she said every.
Said a lot.
But she's been cheated on a lot. She has reason not to trust people. And that takes a lot of work and a lot of therapy where you actually can get the a clear picture of your attachment style.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she's done that. I don't know if she's done that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like it.
It's hard to trust.
I don't think so. I think the reason why we like attachment styles too, and a bunch of these shortcuts in dating, all these books that we're all reading, is that it gives us language, right? Gives us the ability to say, well, you know what? It's not just me. This is an attachment style. This is something that I have had to adapt to, right? This is something that you, as my partner, will have to eventually either adapt to, or we heal together, or whatever the case is. But it gives people kind of almost not a diagnosis. It's not as secure as a diagnosis is, but it is something that I think would be really helpful for somebody like Chelsea, right? Somebody who she feels like she needs a lot of reassurance.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't say why. And I think this would give her the language to say why.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know I what agree I mean? With you. I definitely think she should go to therapy.
Yeah.
I think probably everyone should go to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
we do need that language. I mean, we also see the rise of therapy speak like throughout TikTok
TikTok is killing it. Yeah.
I know. And in this particular relationship, seeing how it started and also what her history is, it makes a lot of sense to me that this would trigger a lot of her fears. I'm making it sound like I'm Team Chelsea, and I'm really not picking a side. But I do kind of understand where she's coming from, and and I think Jimmy, when you even just look at like power dynamics in a relationship, like Jimmy holds a lot of the cards.
Why?
From the beginning of their relationship. He's got the two options. She's going to pick him. I know she said it was just because like he asked first or whatever. I don't know if you have more insight into that. But I think she preferred Jimmy. And so she was needing to get chose.
Right.
For that relationship to continue.
Okay. I see what you mean. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see what you mean. She had to be chosen, even though she was choosing as well. She did not harness that power within herself. She had to be the one who to be chosen by Jimmy. I got you. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Especially in that dynamic where then everything with Jessica was getting in her head and under her skin.
Right.
And I'm sure we're going to talk about, I'm sure we will also unpack the, oh my God, I forgot everyone's name. Laura.
Yes.
Oh, we'll get to Laura. So funny. Yeah. It's so funny how all of their names are like so important in the moment. And then like a season goes by and I'm like, who was that?
Who was that again?
Yeah.
You know, and Laura seeding drama constantly. But yeah, because I mean, that whole Jessica, Chelsea, Jimmy love triangle was seeded. It wouldn't have even existed if Laura wasn't trying to stir the pot.
And Jimmy. But yeah.
True.
Do you think too? I think there's a lot we don't know about Chelsea. I think that because we have not met her parents, we've only met her friends. She got married at 18. She got mad certs. She is right now a flight attendant, right? She's got like, she seems kind of like flighty and like she can't make or she's made really important decisions really, really young. And when we get to this point in the show, I'm thinking, was she running from something?
Ooh.
Like, why? You know what I mean? Like, we had know so little about Chelsea's past. She just really breezes by her past. And Jimmy, you know, he's got his family, his siblings. He seems like he's in a much more stable kind of space with his relationships. I thought that's what you were talking about when you said that Jimmy has the upper hand. Jimmy doesn't seem like he's been cheated on. Like,
That's true.
Fine. He
that
seems
too.
Like his relationship with his parents are fine. Like, he seems all good, you know? And with Chelsea, there's a lot unknown there. I'm not saying that she's not speaking to her parents. I'm just saying we don't know and we've never met them.
Right.
and just some questions around that, but that's it. Tasha, you want to go first?
Well, a question I still have about Chelsea, seeing someone who is so, who has this past, the past that she has, she can't help, it is her past with the men cheating, whatnot, and her anxiousness, how can Chelsea or someone like a Chelsea maintain a relationship at all when they have this anxiousness that has an ability to definitely push people away or send them running? Jimmy is in, he's really sunken in, but like, he also could just run and we'd all be like, well, okay.
First of all, therapy.
Therapy
mm-hmm. for all. Mm-hmm. Because we have to develop a sense of resilience in relationships, because the only way that you can get into the relationship that you want for yourself, into a healthy relationship, there is some level of risk and there's some level of holding space for the unknown.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know who's going to run at the altar yet. Mm-hmm. We will see soon. So we have to have that space to tolerate the unknown. And that's the thing. I think that's what you're picking up on, Justine, in the anxiousness of like, she has trouble holding the unknown.
Yeah. She wants all the answers like right now.
Right now. And she's scared. We all do to a certain extent, but it's how do you act on that? Mm-hmm. And how do you respond to your partner when you're in, you know, a crisis moment or an argument? Mm-hmm. And that is, for anyone listening that may see themselves in Chelsea, that is really, that's what you need to be able to work through, to push past, because it's never going to be certain in a relationship. Yeah. There's always going to be challenges that you have to meet. Mm-hmm. And I mean, therapy and and get a hobby or something else.
Mm-hmm. Therapy, and more therapy. Basically, you got to talk these things out. You got to get comfortable, as you said, like with the unknown, and just getting to a place of comfort with being okay with not having everything figured out today with that relationship.
Yeah, and it doesn't surprise me that she's a flight attendant. That's the line of work that she would gravitate towards, because you know things get sticky. You can just leave. You can be gone. You're in a different time zone, out of sight, out of mind. You're busy. And it's not the same as like clocking into a 9-to-5 and you're there and you got to work through it.
Yeah. Speaking of leaving, so we see in episodes 8 or 9, I think, Chelsea and Jimmy have a huge fight. She storms out. He leaves the apartment for the night. Would love to hear your take on this whole going to bed angry thing. You know, we always hear that's like a big relationship no-no. And you can't leave. You can't leave an apartment. You can't leave. You can't go to bed, you know, angry. Is that true? What are your thoughts?
I don't tend to believe in any blanket statement. Like, never go to bed early. Never go to bed angry. Always, you know, nevers and always don't really work in relationships.
Right.
I will say that, especially in the early phase of a relationship, it is important to work through the conflicts. So if leaving is your way of being like, this conversation is over and we're just going to pick back up where we left off tomorrow and pretend like this didn't happen, then that's going to be problematic for your relationship. But sometimes people just need a pause, right? Like, I've been in some of those conversations where it's just too heated. You're not going to be able to get your point across. You're not really going to be able to hear the other person, which is really what we need to be doing more when we're in conflict with somebody, is listen for understanding, not trying to be understood. And if you're in that place where you're like red zone, not able to reflect on what's being said, it's probably not that constructive for you to stay in it anyway. But if you can say, okay, let's take a pause, bring the temperature down, I'm going to leave and come back to the table tomorrow and we can continue the conversation, then you can actually get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We agree. We talked about this last week and on the episode. I like to write. I need to get all my thoughts out. Same. So sometimes we'll take a break from whatever the hell we're talking about and I just go off and write a whole thing. Sometimes for myself, sometimes I send it to him. He'll read it, he'll process, he'll think of his own thoughts. It just like gives both of us an uninterrupted moment and space to just get out all of our thoughts without the volleying back and forth. So that's worked for me just because I love to write and get all my thoughts down. But yeah, Nate seems to find it helpful as well just to like be able to process all of my feelings and thoughts. And then
do you write it and then give it to him, or you write it
sometimes?
And then
sometimes
that blew my mind, Damona. That blew my mind. I was like, you sent it to him?
God. Yeah. And it's very cathartic for me, obviously, but he has said he appreciates it because it allows him to get the full picture of what the hell I'm trying to say, you know?
Yeah, right.
Without him interrupting and then it gets off course. So it gives him the full thing to process, and then he'll go off and process, and sometimes he'll write something back, or sometimes we'll just talk about it afterwards based on what I wrote. But it's just like giving that uninterrupted space, which often you don't get in the middle of a fight. You just keep going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
So. Yeah, it's very Jane Austen, you know? Like, dear Mr. Darcy.
Mr. Darcy.
Oh, my God.
That's hilarious.
It's important to know also how you and your partner process conflict, too. Like, there was this one fight. My husband and I don't really fight very often, but there was one fight we had like 6 months in, and it was something. What I had brought him to meet one of my family members. This person did something that made him feel really uncomfortable, and he completely clammed up. And then we drove back to our place, like pretty much in silence. And I was like, you need to talk to me about this. Mm-hmm. I need to understand what's happening.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
And I am on your team. And it was like, he felt like, because it was my family member, that he was the one on the outside, and that it was like, he said to me later, if I had left that night, we probably wouldn't still be together. Mm-hmm. But he needed to hear that I was on the team with him. And his style is, and still to this day, he clams up. When he gets quiet and he's up here in his head, he's a writer, so he's like always in his head. But as soon as he goes up in his head, I'm like, I gotta bring you back.
Come back.
Bring you back out. Yeah. So I don't know. He's gonna start writing me a letter or something.
Yeah.
So each situation is different and each person is different, but I love that exercise that you just shared, because I hope it's helpful for other people too.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Justine and I won't be doing it.
No, I can never. I can never. It would be terrible. But let's talk AD and Clay now. So there's a lot of trauma dumping that Clay is doing on AD, has been, I think, since the pods. He grew up watching his father cheat, and brought along on these little ride-alongs with him.
I know that. My jaw was like on the ground.
Yeah, no, that was crazy. Wild. Because I was like, why does he need to be there? Is he also like part of the like
sell
the scheme. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Oh my god, crazy.
Sad. Yeah.
So sad.
And which like side hoe is like, oh sure, like come bring,
I'll just hop in the front seat while your son is in the back. Like
some girls like it. Like, oh, you're a father. Oh, you're bringing him. Oh, you're such a great father. You hang out with him. Like, yeah,
not sexy.
I don't know. I don't know these ladies. I don't know these two men. But this seems like that's a clear one. But he is traumatized, right? He is very constantly kind of warning AD about what his general fears are about the future of their relationship. And AD just has to sit there and process it, right? And kind of be nice to him back, which I think is also interesting. I find there are a lot of similarities between Clay and Chelsea. Clay just expresses it differently.
Interesting.
But I think, like, how does Clay, aside from therapy, right? And maybe what is it that he's going to do in therapy? How does he avoid this trauma dumping on someone who's going to be his life partner?
Mm. It's interesting also watching how he processes information. Like they were talking about how he kind of does what I was just saying my husband used to do, where he would go inside.
Yeah, right.
And he,
right.
You know, he would be like bubbly, upbeat Clay, and then all of a sudden a switch flips and it's it's like that with my husband, except for he's like the bubbly yoga. He's just always inside. So, but there's a switch that his friends, that Clay's friends can see, that they're even kind of warning, kind of explaining to AD that it's something that's happening. It's an internal process in his brain. And it was interesting how I don't know that his natural state is to trauma dump, but I feel like AD is like, well, kind of like I was saying, I'm on your team. Like, tell me what's going on.
Right.
But what's going on in his head is kind of dark.
Yeah. Yes.
It's kind of dark. And that's he needs that filter to know what am I voicing to explain? And what am I voicing to, like, get off my chest?
Yeah.
Isn't the connect of how that is going to then make her feel insecure in the relationship? Right.
Yeah, because it seems like Clay has his dream woman, I would think, right? We got a fat ass. We got big lips. We got petite. We got in shape. We have emotionally secure. We have somebody who doesn't mind saying that he's a baby. A miracle, if you will, of a woman, right?
Right.
And he might ruin it by constantly theorizing that he will cheat on her all the time before she's even met his dad, before she can even connect the dots for him. You know what I mean? Is it that she just feels, is it that he just feels safety for the first time? Is that what we're looking at right now? Do you think?
Yeah.
That's a big question.
I think
sorry.
He does. Yeah, he does feel safety. He also feels lack of judgment from her.
Right, right.
Because all of that bravado that we saw in the pods.
Yeah, it's just.
She saw through it. And it's like, I see the real you. I see that little boy. I mean, she broke him down to that little boy. The little baby.
Going for a ride along.
And he could just be his natural self. He didn't have to do all that bravado stuff that has been a protection mechanism for, like, well, I'm not going to get hurt because I'm going to just bulldoze everything. And I don't have to be vulnerable. I don't have to open up. And now through opening up, he found that sense of safety. So I think it would be confusing at this point for him to feel like, oh, I can't share that with her because she's already a safe person.
Right. Right. Do you think
he's not connecting it down the line of like what that means to her?
Right. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's really, as I mean, he calls himself an egomaniac, but it is, I think, a natural reaction to just be within self at that time. Do you think there's a right time to tell somebody your trauma? Or is there, I'm saying this from personal experience, my trauma comes up all the time. There are times when my eating disorder just acts up and I am not well. And there are times when money stuff acts up for me and I am not well. It's not like a one-time thing that I've told my boyfriend and he is like, okay, I'll just like maneuver my way around these past 3.5 years. It's something that comes up all the time. Mm-hmm. Is there like a right time to reveal certain traumas to your partner, or should you just say it all up front all at once?
Well, I say in F the Fairy Tale, the information needs to be earned. Not everybody is entitled to your life story right off the bat.
Yeah.
However, like this is Love is Blind is such an unnatural situation where you have to make a decision in what is it, 3 weeks? Basically, you need to know if this is the person you're going to spend your life with. You're going to get legally married to this person. You need to get a lot of information out there and fast.
Yeah.
So I think the time to talk about it is appropriate. The question is in how he phrases it, how Clay phrases it.
Mm.
Instead of being like, you know, I'm still processing what my dad did to my mom and my role in it, which obviously he was not, it's not his fault, but like as a kid and you're there with this woman that's not your mom and you're having to hold that secret,
that's a lot from your mom.
Yeah. That's a lot to hold.
Yeah.
And the part that is triggering for AD is, I'm just worried I'm going to disappoint you. I just don't want, you know, it's the transference of those feelings.
Right.
That he had towards his mom. Now we're super analyzing him.
No, it makes sense. No, it makes so much sense because I don't like, for example, last week, eating disorder going crazy. I'm too fat. What am I going to do? I have to be on a diet right now, today. I cannot eat another carb. I didn't say, we're not having dinner to my boyfriend. You know what I mean? I'm not putting anything on him. I'm not saying like, why are you with me? Cause I'm so fat. I'm not saying that to him. I'm not putting those things on him, but I think that's because I'm so therapized. And I think if I wasn't therapized, I would probably be dumping. I would it's a very thin line, I think, with somebody who you're that close to and that's safe with.
Yeah, I relate to that. And I've had my own challenges with eating disorders, too. And it's like a constant, it's a constant reel.
It's like a lull.
You can't shut it off. You cannot. And I have to stop myself sometimes because if it's just, if the reel played out loud to my husband.
Oh, no. That
you wouldn't be able to hear anything else.
Exactly. Yeah.
So. But he can be my ally,
right?
In knowing like I'm having a moment with this, so it's like, okay, you know, I've dealt with this in the past. I'm having a moment right now, and without having to hear the whole tape playback, he can hear that and be like, I got you. And it doesn't make it go away necessarily.
Yeah.
But it does make it a safe space for both. For both parties.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay.
Personal share time. Ding.
I know. Love podcasting.
Creeps up. I know. Creeps up every now and then. So we'll move away from trauma. I want to talk about grace. Grace, I've been saying, is like the buzzword of the century. Everybody's asking for grace. I need grace. We see Clay. Is it not? I feel like I just learned the word grace in the last like 18 months. It's like everywhere. We see Clay asking for grace from AD with his job schedule. We see Kenneth asking Brittany for grace when she pointed out that he was like distracted after the honeymoon. We understand that with these couples in this particular process, they
do need a lot of time and space and, you know, a moment to get to know each other and their quirks. I understand when, you know, Clay and Kenneth are asking for grace. But a question that we discussed last episode, our recap was, like, at what point do you exhaust grace? At what point is it time for you to just, like, meet your partner where they need you to be?
Again, this is not a normal situation because they're having to make a really important, probably the most important decision of their life in a pressure cooker.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, grace is cute and all. However, you don't really have time for a lot of grace. Like, you got to figure it out. And when I hear in those scenarios asking for grace, it's more asking for space, asking for me to tolerate me as I am, because I can't get to the place where I need to be in time for you to make a decision as about whether or not you could spend the rest of your life with me.
Yeah.
And that to me is not fair. It's like, I'm not going to change enough. So take it or leave it. That's what I hear in those particular scenarios. Other than that, love the idea of grace. And I think I love it in terms of a lot of times people, when I'm coaching singles, we are so quick to make a decision. And we're like, oh, saw this thing I didn't like. Red flag, can't live with it. And there's so much more nuance when we approach it with more curiosity of like, what could that look like? Or how might that be different? So I'm not saying like, give everybody a pass and give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But when you're in a situation where like, this is potentially the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with, this, there's personal responsibility that I think both parties need to take before anybody can just be, quote, given grace.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. They do a lot on this show that I think is really interesting. And I think it's the downfall of a lot of them of like, well, this is our everyday life. Well, this is my everyday life and you have to fit in it. So they do a lot of that talk on this show. And they do it on Married at First Sight as well. And I don't think it's fair. I think if somebody has specific expectations and you have to say yes at the altar in, you know, 10 business days, you have to know what adjustments you can make even for that just like 4 week period. I think this like, this is my life and you got to get used to it. I think it's, I don't know if that's even fair to the other person, because whose life is this? Especially somebody like Clay, he's an entrepreneur, he's got side hustles, he's got a 9-to-5 job. And AD's a cheerleader. Who knows when the Patriots going to call her back? You know what I mean? Like, who knows, right? And I don't think that's fair, but I think expectations being laid out flat fully, that's fair. You know, that is where you get into the fair conversation. What do you think, Natasha? Because you feel very strongly about this work.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's it, though. I think you got to lay out the expectations. Like, I think AD needs to lay out exactly I will feel good when we've spent ample time bonding on our own, when I feel comfortable in this new townhouse by myself, you know, where it's okay if you don't come home because you want to go tend to the Airbnbs or whatever the hell he's doing. Like, I think she needs to lay out exactly what it is that she feels she'll need, what her expectations are, that he has to show up for before he's given grace. That's what I think. As you said, like, you have to earn it. You're a stranger, particularly in this process, you're a stranger to me, so I'm not just going to give you the pass to get to stay out at night because you want to tend to your Airbnbs. I don't yet feel comfortable in this townhouse. I don't yet feel comfortable with you being out in these streets when you tell me you have a pass of cheating, all this stuff. Like, this is my barrier, these are my boundaries, and I need to feel good there before I can even fathom this idea of giving you grace. I understand it, but like, I can't, you have to earn it, you know what I mean? But I think that's on AD to lay that out, though. I think it's on her to kind of express
and
what those expectations are,
you know. I like I think it's really wild for him to be like, I'm probably going to cheat on you and I'm not coming home. That's a wild, that's yes. crazy.
I mean, right. It's ridiculous for him to make these demands even. Yeah. And as you said, Justine, like kind of speak from his chest, like you just got to get with it. Like, this is just my schedule.
Hell, what?
Like that also is not fair at all.
Yeah.
But I am kind of looking to the person who is going to be giving the grace, the one that needs to say like,
okay,
well, I need to, this is how I'll feel good, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that guy has something to work towards, you know?
Right.
I think nobody's really given him a boundary like that before, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like this is a theme that we've seen on Love is Blind in the past.
Yep.
And I don't know if it's an age thing or just something with these guys where they're like, I want to still do whatever it is that I was doing. Like, I'm going to play video games. I'm going to hang out with my friends. I'm going to be out all night. This is just how my life is. And that's just how it's going to continue to be, even though now I have a wife. It's like, whoa, what did you think marriage would look like?
Right.
Like, yeah. You signed up to do the show if, in case I know Clay was like, I never saw the show before. Okay. All right, Clay. But you knew what you were signing up for.
Right. At minimum. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I haven't read that many stories of like, oh, sure, wife is just fine with you going out all night and just living your life the way that you were living it as a single man, and that's just fine. Like, good luck to you finding that in the pod, sir.
Or
in the streets, wherever. Good luck.
It is interesting. We haven't seen for any of the couples, I don't think, maybe in the pods a little bit, but like a clear conversation on what each of them expect out of a marriage. Like, as a husband, this is how I expect to act. As a wife, this is what I'm expecting out of a wife, and vice versa. I feel like we haven't seen that. Like,
you know who has had it? Brett and Tiffany.
They talked about it? Okay.
They talked about it. Every all their packages were so boring because they were like, okay, well, what do you want? Okay, well, how many of these bills do you want to pay? Okay, sounds good. Let's go to dinner. Like, it was just nothing because they were both 36. They knew what they wanted. They were very, you know, they were equally yoked. It was like perfect. But I think with Damona, before you got on, me and Natasha were talking about how men's insecurities and women's insecurities show up so differently on this show. And I think this is one of them ways that it shows up differently. I think we talk a lot about Chelsea. People are going to go in on Chelsea. They have been for the party and the this and that. But Matt of Matt and Colleen, I don't know if you remember them.
Of course.
Matt was the most insecure, maybe the most insecure person we've seen on this show. Like, he and, was.
Also a little bit of an alcoholic, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Raging alcoholic. Definitely QAnon, like, full, like, crazy. Right? He was crazy.
Like,
but it was an insecurity that he had within himself. And I think people don't talk about men's insecurities the same way as they talk about women's. Because they show up differently, you know. But this is one of those ways where it's showing up
like
differently
that.
For Clay.
I do feel like overall folks are way more harsh on the women.
Yeah.
On this show.
Insecure women specifically, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they're very quick
to point
out.
Yeah. Their actions feel loud
in
a way that's
right.
And emotional.
And emotional. Yeah.
And they get a lot of screen time for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? But you're right. It does show up differently. And it shows up differently also in relationships. Because as we were saying earlier, the way you show up changes based on who you are in relationship with, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like my husband is like super secure, like comes from like a loving two parent household, like just really easygoing about everything, very solutions oriented. And it's like there's nothing to really be dramatic about. But like in past relationships, when I was with like high drama people, I was a completely different, sometimes a little bit, a little bit. Like I would have gotten some screen time. Let's just say it that way. Love is blind. Dependent on those people. Now, you know what I mean? Like, and then you kind of learn, you teach people how to treat you and you learn how to relate to someone based on the responses that you get. to mm-hmm. what you say and do as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So last but not least, we got to wrap up by talking about Jerame, as we like to call him. Jerame.
Oh my God,
Laura.
That's what I call him too.
You call him Jerame too?
Okay. I call him Jerame.
Jerame.
That's a good one.
Jerame. You got to kind of go on the J.
Jerame. Oh my God. So we have Jerame, who is fully engaged to Laura, but just couldn't shut shit down with Sarah Ann. Maybe he's genuinely confused and felt like he made a wrong decision. Maybe he's just a narcissist. Narcissist is another buzzword often used.
Ding, ding.
Yep. Very overused. I don't even know if I'm using the right term right now, but I looked it up. The definition, a narcissist is defined as a personality disorder where someone needs and seeks too much attention, wants people to admire them, and therefore lacks the ability to understand or care about the feelings of others, which to us sounds a little bit like Jerame.
Well, and you can have, that's clinical narcissistic personality disorder, but you can exhibit narcissism.
Okay.
Even if you are not necessarily a diagnosable narcissist.
Got it. Okay. So
agreed.
So Jerame, since we can't diagnose him yet, he's exhibiting narcissistic tendencies, or however you just worded it. So we come to the ending of episode 9, where he goes off until 5 a.m. with Sarah Ann to talk, quote unquote, and just expects Laura to somehow take it. If Jerame really wanted to break up with Laura, he could have figured out a way to do it, right? He could have figured out some way to figure it out. But he seemingly goes out with a bang, almost like on purpose. What's your read on Jerame? And just a bigger question, how do you know if you're dating a narcissist or someone who has narcissistic tendencies? Like, because it is a word that we use a lot. So, and everyone's kind of throwing it around.
Yeah.
How do we know? How do you really know you're dating a narcissist? And what's your read on Jerame?
Yeah, they're master manipulators, so usually they're pretty good at getting in early.
Yeah, and they always will put their needs ahead of your needs or the needs of anyone else, and usually it's a lack of awareness. I don't know, maybe similar to what we were talking about with some other people, awareness of how what they say and do affects the other people in their lives. So with Jerame, I don't know him that well, but I do feel like he came in hot, also like taking up a lot of space. Like, remember, he was like so
in the pods.
Oh, I also have been saying, like, this is like the corniest season. I was like, these dudes are so corny. The dudes specifically. Right?
Really?
They're so corny this year.
No, Matt,
like,
my favorite,
with all their
book.
Jokes and the thing. And it, I was like, and Jerame is the king of the corn.
yeah.
And I feel like he in the pods even was like trying to sort of provoke and be like be
definitely
like loud and obnoxious and if I'm just. If I'm just me to a 10 and they're still okay with that, then they're okay. And yeah, I feel like Jerame needs to be that guy to feel like he get attention that he desperately craves.
He's
an attention seeker.
So he's doing it because he's missing a whole personality? Damn, Damona.
Is that too harsh?
No, that makes a lot of sense. Because he did come into the pods and he was the only one who asked about social media following. He was the only one who asked. Or no.
Seriously.
Yeah, he
I
did.
Think yeah. He was the only one, right? He was the only, Jessica did too, because Jessica had like a previous issue
with it.
But he was the only one, and then he asked about political stuff. He was the only one we saw do that. Like, he was the one stirring up the pot the most.
Constantly stirring and constantly getting attention for it. And so I feel like I'm going to go out on a limb. I don't know. I feel like in the real world, he's the guy that gets overlooked all the time. And so now he's enjoying being the belle of the ball because his little provoking tendencies could get him the attention that he really craves.
Mm.
So this is another attention seeking behavior.
Yeah. Right. It's weird also because he chose Laura. They almost have this like competitive relationship. Like their shit's weird. They like are kind of always like one upping each other. He's going off on a, you know, doing his attention seeking shit, and she like calls him out on it. So it's weird that I hear exactly what you're saying, but then he chose the person that he did, who's always trying to like bring him back down and like shut him down, you know, kind of tries to diminish him, and then they kind of go back and forth. I think he gets off on that.
I think she's not so much shutting him down as like, I think it kind of amps him up. Like, oh, you're challenging me now. Like now it's a battle. And as we were saying earlier, she also is a pot stirrer.
Yeah, she's a pot stirrer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can totally see why he would respond to that, because then he's like, oh, okay, we're like both stirring the pot together.
A mess.
This is very exciting.
The drama, just loves the drama. Yeah, that makes sense. He loves the attention, loves the drama, wants to be part of some conversation. Yeah, that makes sense. Because he knows exactly what he's doing with Sarian. He knows the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do.
Right.
But he's getting off on stirring up shit among the whole cast and being at the center of it.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And then also stirring up a little bit of drama with Laura, who he knows is not going to just like bow down and be passive. So he's like looking forward to it. He's getting off on it in some way. Weird.
That's my hot take.
So weird.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, Damona, thank you so much for joining us. This was
so great.
Really fun just parsing through these crazy couples and getting your thoughts. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me and for letting me talk about my favorite show.
Of course. Where can people find you? Tell them about your book. What exciting things you got going on.
F the Fairy Tale is now available everywhere books are sold. Ebook, audiobook, and of course, hardcover. And I'm always doing this kind of thing on Instagram at Damona Hoffman. Mm-hmm. I take questions on my podcast, Dates and Mates. So you can always DM me a question or, you know, submit it through Spotify or wherever you're listening to the podcast. And I can get you dating advice so that you don't end up with a narcissist or a or a trauma dumper or any of the folks that we've been talking about this episode.
Nice. Thank you, Damona. Everybody go follow her on all of the things. Go purchase F the Fairy Tale. Go listen to Dates and Mates. And yes, we'll see you again soon, Damona.
Yes. Thanks, Damona.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Ooh. Let's talk Potomac, friend.
Yes. Oh, man.
Man, oh, man. So they open up with this Grand Dame crowning foolishness. I hate it, too. And I love how later in the episode when they go to Night Golf, Karen and Candace are talking, and Karen flat out says to Candace that Giselle has nothing going for her. Like, she knew exactly what that Grand Dame thing was. I got so much satisfaction hearing seeing Karen even just say that out loud. Like, Giselle has nothing going for her. Like, we're not dumb. We see exactly what she's doing here, Candace.
Yeah. I love how they're not playing into it either. They're like, refuse. Get something else.
Nope. Sorry. Get a storyline, bitch. I'm not gonna even entertain this bullshit that you're doing. I'm gonna go to the bathroom, head out. See y'all at the bus. I'm not doing this. Like, oh my God. It's just coming so obvious. Like, is Giselle not embarrassed? She has nothing.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I know you're Andy's favorite, but goddamn, we're on television, God, Giselle.
Right. Please.
Oh my God. And she has this man who she's kind of dating, sort of, kind of ish, and he's on Bravo. Why haven't we figured out a way to get him to surprise see you in the place and then do something with him? You can't even convince him to do something for you. The storyline, he knows all about this.
So boring. Oh. My God. So we learn, she's still dating Jason, which I guess she thinks just dating him is enough.
And that one picture that they have together.
And that one picture that's what I'm saying, they keep flashing. That's not enough. We need to see him. I don't care. I don't care unless I see him walking, moving in motion during filming.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see them go to dinner, and she's talking about Grace going off to college, going to Florida.
Yeah.
And Wendy and Candace are just on the, like, they can't hold their face.
I know.
And so, of course, that gets spun to, you know, I'm talking about my daughter, blah, blah, blah.
I think that the looks get spun. But to me, what was really problematic was what Wendy said.
I wouldn't send my boys to Florida.
I wouldn't send my boys to Florida because of this, that racism and black and brown people. I was like, girl, we are in America. Okay. It's all up.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
That was a pinpointed, like, well, I'm a PhD. I talk about the news and I'm going to try to make you look stupid and talk about your child. I thought that was crazy.
Yeah. It was very much a reach. I was like, Wendy, you're trying to comfort Giselle in a way that is stupid. You're not going to send your boys to college in Florida. That's where they want to go. There's racism everywhere. Right. What you expect them to do? I'm going to start limiting our choices for our children because you don't want them to face racism. They go to school in New York and get fucking shanked by the NYPD. So who knows? Like, yeah, that was definitely Wendy trying to comfort her. And I was like,
And trying to make herself look like, well, I keep up with current events. And I know the governor is doing this law, and I know that they're doing this law. Like, that is, come on, Wendy.
Stupid. But yeah, I love how Wendy and Candace just Giselle, her storylines. Now she's talking about her daughter.
I know.
They can't even do it. They're like, who's leaving to go to college? Now that's her storyline. They're like, I can't even pretend to care. Like, everybody sees she's giving us nothing.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
What else? We had Giselle again, no storyline, dragging up Karen and Mia's drama, and Karen accusing Mia of cheating and coming for people's marriages, and Karen brings up how Mia brought up rumors about her before, and Mia's threatening to tell the full story, and
again and again, just the past around. I will say the good part about this cast is that none of them are afraid of the OGs, and I really like that about this cast. Nobody's afraid to go up against Giselle. Nobody's afraid to go up against Karen. And in New Jersey, everybody's afraid of Teresa.
Oh, I see.
She's a felon.
Yeah,
everybody's afraid.
Hey, it's clearly, like, connections to the mafia and shit. Yeah. I'm afraid of everybody. Everybody in Jersey kids. Shit.
I know. Everybody was afraid of Jen Shaw. Also, no felon.
Right.
You know, they're kind of afraid of Mary because Mary's so fucking mean and ruthless and doesn't care. Like, the fear of other castmates is never good. So I like that this cast, they're not afraid to go up against those.
That's true. Yeah. And even Mia, like, Karen brought her in, and she still don't give a
fuck. Yeah.
Like, she's still coming right at Karen's marriage. Like,
yes, and Karen really, really orchestrates this cast the same way she orchestrated Jack and Jill. I know she did. You know, like, I brought you in, is that it's the same Jack and Jill mindset. It's the same thing.
But she wants people to, like, kiss her ring and all of that, and these ladies are not doing that, so.
No. Yeah. No.
But yeah, I'm curious what Mia... this true story that she has on Karen.
Please.
It's just made up, right? Like, she doesn't know shit.
Definitely. I don't think we'll ever know about Blue Eyes or the firefighter or whoever Karen was messing with on the side of Ray. Poor Ray. I don't know. We'll never know.
I don't know. Yeah. We also got a scene, I guess the next day, the ladies are playing some game that Robin brought, and we learn that Juan's kink is he wants to watch Robin have sex with another man or woman or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just wants to emotionally feel like she's getting even. Even Juan wants to feel like you're getting even.
God, Robin.
Please. Just do it. Just do it. At this point, just get a boyfriend. Your husband wants you to get a boyfriend. This is crazy.
He truly is giving you permission, girl. I don't get it either. I love how she said everybody was like, yeah, I mean, checks out. No one, like, had any... It made total sense to all of us.
And then he's, like, calling it a kink. Really, it's probably just guilt.
This guilt, straight up repentance, or, like, repentance, or whatever they call it.
batted an eye when she said that. Oh my god. A mess. We learn Ashley is working with a confidence coach and is working on singing.
Natasha,
again.
Let me tell you, and let me tell y'all listeners right now, geez. If I quit this job, it's to do this.
Become a confidence coach.
That sounds like a 4-day weekend certification.
All right.
And that sounds like something I could do. I already did it for Jacob and Ordy on our Instagram. I could do this. I could do this job.
Yeah. Build their confidence. Oh my god.
Build the confidence of like delusional wealthy
Ashley
people.
Darby. Right.
Or yeah, people, I guess she's not even wealthy. I guess she's just hanging on to wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Delusional divorcees.
Oh, that's like a
market.
That's a little market.
Market of people.
There's definitely a market for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, Ashley. I mean, I get it. You're with this old, disgusting old man who cheated on you every which way with every which body. That would do a number. That would do a number to anybody's confidence and self-esteem. Yes.
That's true.
So I get it. I hope along with that coach, he's also in therapy. That would be nice. I hope this is not just the coach that she's going to parse through that trauma, but okay.
Yeah.
Her voice wasn't half bad. Her little singing, it wasn't half bad.
It wasn't. It sounded very, almost country adjacent. Mm-hmm. Like almost sounded like there was a little twang there, which gets you far. Gets you really far.
Okay. I don't know what she's gonna do with the singing. Ashley in these new ventures, the singing, the athleisure line, the like just need one thing to make sense and stick. I don't know
though. Yeah, because nothing's out now, and this was 6 months ago, so
right. Oh my god. And that was pretty much it. Right?
Yeah, at the very end, they confront Giselle, actually, Robin confronts Candace and Wendy about the looks
faces
that they were giving
and
making faces. But I think what Wendy said was so much more palpable and so much more evidence than a facial expression.
Right.
I don't know why these,
they
aren't
call
hanging
that
on to that.
Yeah. I don't know either. Not the brightest stars.
I know. I thought to myself when Robin was doing that, I was like, these two have a podcast. How the fuck are they making anything entertaining for an hour?
I don't know.
I was like, you can't even find the shade. Like you caught a stray, right? You caught a stray from Wendy. You can't even hang on to that. Ooh, Lord.
I don't know.
Oh, Natasha, I don't know.
Yeah. Please write in the comments if you listen to Reasonably Shady. And
please.
What is it about it? I'm curious.
Yeah.
I feel like Giselle, I can see the entertainment value in Giselle. I could see Giselle.
Yeah, she's a
somehow,
fun storyteller.
Yeah. Piecing together a podcast. Robin, though, I don't understand that. I don't know what she's up there talking about. Why would I want to hear it? I don't know.
Exactly. And if I do, it's probably only on Patreon and some foolishness.
Some craziness. I know. Oh, my God. But yeah, that's Potomac. It's pretty much
That's Potomac. They're still on vacation.
Still
Crunch
on
was
vacation.
Like, they're still doing this? I was like, we haven't even gotten to reunion, babe. We're not even in the United States.
You know how I knew, like, they really are reaching this episode, just trying to just put together these episodes. This episode, when they went out to dinner, they showed every single person ordering. Every single person's drink, appetizer, entree, dessert. They showed it. They're trying to eat up time because they gotta deliver these episodes. I said, why am I hearing everybody's dessert or like
No, I don't know, but you know what? I think Kiarna is going to add a lot. I think that's her name.
I
Kiarna.
Think so. Yeah.
I think she's going to.
Please.
Mm-hmm. I have
Neck
a luxury confession.
Same.
Luxury confessional look. Her little bow and the flip.
Yeah.
The hair flip. Oh, it's
so cute. I love her. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited for her.
Please save us, Kiarna, because. Thank God for Love is Blind being on right now.
dead ass.
A whole episode recap of that is rough.
No.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Nothing to learn.
No. Anyways, we'll be back tomorrow, y'all.
We will.
Rate, review, subscribe.
Yeah.
Yes. Hit us up on all the things. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Sure will. Bye, guys.
Bye.
mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.